Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable.
On the Midwest Film Journal website. This is Evan's first time submitting to the Folkster Review, and we love how perfectly this piece interprets metaphorical elements of our sunrise theme. It starts out with a quote from the film, True Romance. Come on up, Evan. I had it here for larger text, yes.
Okay, as Alice said, my wife Allie and I are two co-founders of a film review commentary website called Midwest Film Journal. We've been running it for 3 years now. And part of what we do at our website is we'll just review new movies. We also write essays about film, and we have a column series called Movies That Made Us that we and our co-founders have all contributed to every once in a while if the mood strikes us. So I actually wrote this to publish on our anniversary last year in October. The movie True Romance was directed by Tony Scott and written by Quentin Tarantino. It was actually Quentin Tarantino's first filmed script with any amount of budget. So he has always said it is his romance movie. The movie starts with this quote, "Until this day, the events that followed all still seem like a distant dream. But the dream was real and was to change our lives forever. I kept asking Clarence, the main character, why our world seemed to be collapsing and all things seemed to be getting so shitty. And he'd say, that's just the way it goes. But don't forget, it goes the other way too. That's the way romance is. Usually that's the way it goes. But every once in a while, it goes the other way too." And I was introduced to the film True Romance through the happenstance of my dad owning the soundtrack, which is one of the best-selling soundtrack albums of the 90s, which had found and added to my Windows Media Library back in 2002 while I was preparing for a family road trip to South Carolina. While making the mix, I happened upon You're So Cool, the film's theme, a Hans Zimmer composition that borrows pretty heavily from other soundtracks, but uses heavy use of the marimba and xylophone. I played it endlessly on my Walkman during that trip. In fact, I don't really remember anything about that trip besides You're So Cool. Became my private anthem of sorts over the years, the song I would listen to and fall asleep to in any environment, anywhere, from Boy Scout camping trips, family trips, on the school bus, at a variety of jobs. And that song, I didn't actually watch True Romance for another 3 years until I was in my late teens, but when I did, I fell deeply in love with the movie. Quentin Tarantino sold the True Romance script to fund his debut film, Reservoir Dogs, which many of you are probably familiar with. A much darker movie. In truth, Tarantino's original script for True Romance was much darker too, until director Tony Scott flipped a few acts around and saved the romance in the movie, which was originally supposed to be tragic. It's otherwise vintage Tarantino. Characters talk like they're much cooler than they are. Women characters fend for themselves violently. Criminals talk about movies and make wild monologues. The cast, led by Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette as Clarence in Alabama, is even more notable for its massive list of early 90s who's who's. Dennis Hopper, Val Kilmer, Gary Oldman, Christopher Walken, Brad Pitt, in a role that he essentially later would win an Oscar for, when he, same type of role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for Quentin Tarantino. Saul Rubinick, Bronson Pinchot, James Gandolfini, Michael Rapaport, and it sort of just goes on. It's a who's who movie. Of course, watching True Romance in mid-2005 never really occurred to me that this was a stacked cast. All I cared about was the way in which Tarantino heightened the relationship between Clarence and Alabama, star-crossed lovers in decaying Detroit who meet when a call girl, Alabama, is sent by her pimp to sleep with a comic shop worker named Clarence on his birthday. She meets Clarence at Sonny Chiba's triple feature by spilling popcorn on him. He's oblivious to her come-ons and is just happy to have someone who enjoys the movies with him. They meet cute, they fall in love, and when Clarence tries to free her from her profession, he ends up accidentally murdering her pimp and making off with a suitcase full of cocaine, which is a Quentin Tarantino script. But the two decide to sell out in Los Angeles, selling the cocaine to a movie producer. From afar, True Romance does seem like it's just a fantasy of a teenage boy writing about what he wants from a relationship. And it sure is, but what it sets apart is how honest it nonetheless feels, particularly for a movie written by Tarantino. In the director's commentary, he states that people often ask if he'll ever make a romance movie as he moves through every possible genre-changing history. And he says, well, I wrote True Romance. Beneath the obvious elements of comic shop kid meets call girl and they fall in love, the relationship between Clarence and Alabama is always mutual, never lopsided, and the two care for another without question in every situation. The fantasy of True Romance is about two people who recognize another of their kind and who want to love and be loved in return. True Romance never struck me as a movie to emulate, per se. I guess the general fear you see online is that people see violent fantasy movie and think it inspires the worst possible outcomes. Although I had not experienced my own True Romance at the time, what the movie has always left me wasn't a desire to wear Elvis glasses or a Hawaiian shirt or sell a bunch of coke to a producer, and it wasn't an impression that women exist to be just like Alabama. Of all the movies about young men falling in love, True Romance has always felt like one of the most emotionally authentic, not from a silly depiction of violence, but from the relationship that develops. A romantic notion that you'll meet someone just for you. Before I met Allie in June 2013, I had only ever had two girlfriends. Those relationships didn't go so well. Still went on dates, but just like any introverted boy, those didn't really work out either. It's fine, dating is designed for failure. It didn't really matter. I just spent my time on the internet instead, mostly making shit up and watching movies. Allie was working at a comic store and I was working at a bookstore when we first met. Our first meeting was thanks to a mutual friend who was hosting an online comic book course that Allie was working as her teaching assistant. I got up to visit that class and the three of us went out to lunch. Allie did not seem remotely interested in talking to me. She was going to see Iron Man 3 that midnight and with a friend she was dragging along for company. Later, I messaged Allie on Twitter and told her we should go to some bookstores together, non-committal. So later, I invited her to see Man of Steel, hardly a Sonny Chiba triple feature, but our after-movie coffee bore little resemblance to the classic scene where Clarence and Alabama go through the Playboy About Me questionnaire. I did drop my MP cup on the floor a few times while nervously playing with it. We bonded over Guy Pearce and his movies. A little while later, she invited me to see Django Unchained, which was playing again at Castleton, so Tarantino again. The next day, we went to a Star Wars exhibit at the Indiana State Museum. Afterwards, we got coffee at a cafe near where we would actually buy our first house a few years later. And during that day, she told me how she spent her teenage years online, making shit up. There are moments where you know, and that was one of them. The first time I ever visited her, we watched Fright Night. The first night I ever cared for her while she was sick, we watched The Omen. The first time she spent the night at my apartment, we watched Red Dragon, which we still disagree about, but was relevant because we bonded over the show Hannibal that summer. Most importantly, by the end of that summer, we had bonded over our mutual love of True Romance, which her grandparents loved. It feels like a distant dream, but the dream was real to change our lives forever. 3 years after that, You're So Cool played at our wedding, and we kissed as a married couple for the first time.
You're so cool, you're so cool. Next up, we have a wonderful poem by Deborah Peterson called Awash.
Would go by, the sunrise ended up becoming my symbol for these transitions. It started to even gel more when I had the opportunity to do a spiritual writing retreat at a Zen monastery in Santa Fe. So the lights were then starting to turn on. And this was born at the monastery. And fleshed out as it got closer to being submitted. Awash, dream drunk, ecstatic breath, life force, unencumbered now with these waves, these rays, with this promise, the darkness ends. The fears shatter and flow away. The disillusion and pain under a starless night and without the safety of the moon have fallen into a colorless abyss. Now that the sun has risen, behold this paean, this reveille, this promise, this breath, this next new step, face up to the sky to be bathed in the morning brilliance.
All right, thank you, Deborah. Next up, we have David Allen with Good Morning.
They always put these microphones up.
Far
too tall. Okay. One of the great things about moving back to Indiana after 20 years in the Far East is getting together with people like you. The poetry, especially in this part of Indiana, is just great, and the people are wonderful. And I invite you all to take part in some of the poetry gatherings that we have monthly in Elwood and in Anderson and here in Noblesville. Great, great people. This poem is called Good Morning. Good morning. I awake and kiss you lightly on the cheek. Your pillow is bare, and softly stroke your long brown hair. You turn in bed to face me, looking into my eyes with eyes I'd love to drown my soul in. There's but one body's impression. There's but one side of the bed to make. I whisper softly that I love you. The radio answers with a song. I leave it playing all night long to accompany this loneliness. I start to leave. You reach for my hand. We touch. The air is not as soft. You pull me to your side. I stare at the pillow. I take your head in my hands. We kiss. Wine is sweet. The taste turns bitter. You slowly dissolve. Parts of you breaking apart, a jigsaw puzzle. I scream, I pick up the pieces of you and start the glue, but the head's on backwards. A dog jumps on the bed, scattering you around the room. On my knees, I search for you. My dog licks my face. My eyes lose their sleep. I awake. There is no puzzle. My dog sleeps, head nuzzled in the crook of my arm. You were at home, unaware for a while, we made love in the night of my life.
All right, next up we have Sophie Dole with The Sunset After a Storm.
And Sophie's not here because she's ill, but I am here, and I will read to you what she was going to say. And I'm going to hang her ribbon on that thing. Remind me to do that. Okay. All right. This is what she wrote, and then it also kind of goes with her photograph, which is just to the right of David. As a landscape photographer, I don't have full control over my subject. And my plan to shoot a sunrise or sunset is often thwarted by a storm. If weatherman forecasts the rain to stop around sunset, I go as planned and wait for the storm to stop. I love watching the dark clouds slowly dissipate to reveal the golden sunset. For a moment, the sky is painted with all hues of black, blue, and gray, splashed with the colors, with the golden colors of the sunset. My patience to wait out the storm is then rewarded with the beautiful sunset photos that have won prizes in photography competitions. The experience is a reminder for me to remain hopeful during times of hardship and suffering in life. As I wait out the storm, the sky can be so dark. It's easy to forget that a golden sunset can occur on a stormy day just as on a sunny day. Whenever I can't see the sunset through the clouds, that doesn't mean the sunset no longer exists. In life, the darkness of sorrow or pain can hide a joyous future like the dark clouds hide beautiful sunsets. But in time, the dark sorrow and pain will dissipate as the bright golden future becomes the present. Always hope and wait for that beautiful sunset after a storm. Next up, Tree Whispers by Dennis L. White. Dennis is out of town, but his piece is going to be read by Spike Wilson. Well, while you're making your way, I'll go take that ribbon over to that piece. Oh, smart. Don't waste a moment.
Just on a personal note, this is one of my favorite poems in any of the PSRs I've read, so I'm very lucky to get to read it tonight. And this is True Whispers by Dennis White. You whisper through curling, yellowed parchment and faded photos, standing in the shadows, smiling, amused at my feeble attempts to draw you out into the daylight. I fish for you through an ocean of microfilm and microfish, not knowing if I've cast in the right direction, but I sense you lurking in the deep waters. Through graveyards, I stumble, looking for tombstone documentation to find where you have ended your earthly sojourn. I want to exhume you from your paper trail coffin and give you new life and a resurrected voice to extract from you the secrets and essence of your existence. Seeking the relevance, the bridge that connects us through common genes, the DNA strands that bind us together as family.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.